Hello and welcome back to the Arsenal Beat. We may have been off the airwaves, but we've still been at the Emirates getting as close to the action as anyone this side of Gunasaurus. I'm Mark Manbryans from PA, and today I'm joined by regulars Simon Collings of the Evening Standard and the Telegraph's Sam Dean. We've got a few talking points, a preview of Lons on Wednesday night, and a return to the pod can only mean the return of Guest the Gooner 2. The main talking point all season almost has been goalkeeping position at Arsenal. I think, strangely, you know, it's not the first time we've had two, if you like, number ones battling for a place in the team, but this really seems to have captured the imagination of the fans, if you like. Sam, I'll come to you first, given that you covered Brentford a lot. You were across David Raya when Arsenal were originally interested in him. For you, is this worth it for Mikel? Should he have just kept Ramsdale, or can you see why Raya came in and will be, it seems, the long-term number one?
I think you can't argue with a manager and a coaching staff who think they can make a position better. And if they think that Raya is going to be even 2% better than Aaron Ramsdale, then that is justifiable in their eyes. Obviously, the issue has been a lot of that has been around Ramsdale's popularity with the fans, his importance to this team over the past couple of seasons, the role he played in getting Arsenal to the Champions League. And I think a lot of people have sympathy for him and the way it's been handled. What I would say is, while I think it's very justifiable that Arteta's done this, I do think increasingly that the way he's done it could have been better. And I wonder if he reflects on that press conference after Everton when he spoke about changing the goalkeepers and substituting them during games. And I wonder if in hindsight he would do things a little bit differently. And the thing that really struck me most about the Brentford game on Saturday, and I was talking to Simon about this too, is it's reached the point now where Ramsdale's performance and his shakiness, people sort of weren't looking at that through the prism of Ramsdale. They're looking at it through the prism of Arteta. And effectively, people were saying, look what Arteta has done to this man. Whether that's fair or not, that's what people were saying. And I think it's now reached the point where that performance in the first half from Ramsdale and his nerviness and his shakiness effectively embarrassed the manager. And I don't think Arteta would have liked that one bit for that reason more than anything else. And I think for that reason, that's probably the end of Ramsdale at Arsenal, whether that's in January or long term. I don't know. No one knows at this point. But there's one thing sort of being a bit shaky and being inferior to David Raya on certain statistical measures like distribution or claiming crosses. Another thing is whenever you play, everyone looks and talks about the manager and the way he's done things. And I suspect Arteta is probably going to reach a point where he wants to move on from this for good. And I think we could see that a bit in his answers and in the press conference and the post-match broadcast interviews as well.
Yeah, he's not the only one who wants to move on from it. I think I've made the point after most pressers that it seems to be just hanging over everyone, doesn't it? You mentioned there about the 2% thing, and I think it's something we spoke about earlier in the season, isn't it? When you got so close to beating Manchester City in a title race, you know, this is treble winning Manchester City and you ran them all the way. Any fine margin where you believe you can improve that team, you have to take that chance, don't you? Simon, Sam mentioned there that the nerviness and the shakiness of Ramsdale on Saturday. Is that, do you think, born from the pressure that he now feels, but also coupled with the fact that he's not playing every week, is he, at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the performance was kind of what you'd expect from a keeper who's played. He hadn't started a league game since the start of September. He's had two games, you know, in the Carabao Cup, one game for England. You know, he just looked rusty and short of confidence, which is what you'd expect. I think it would have been stranger if Ramsdale had come out and been absolutely commanding and put in this brilliant performance, which he did to a degree the last time they went to Brentford. But if you remember, that was, he'd only been out of the team for a few weeks. And I think it has now got to the point where it kind of feels pretty unsustainable and untenable. I think this idea of rotation, which Arteta sort of floated. I think it could have existed. I think there could have been a way where certainly for this season, you could have got through with, if Ramsdale had all those Champions League group games, you know, just given Raya the league games. And I think there would have been enough maybe to satisfy both parties for a year. But it feels like now that it's such a clear hierarchy. And I know Arteta wants to move on from it. And I think it will now, because I don't think we'll see Ramsdale again until January, unless they get through early against Lons and they can maybe play him in PSV. But I agree with Sam that I think, you know, it's got to the point where Ramsdale's going to have to leave, isn't it? He's too good a goalkeeper to be a number two. And it's just a bit of a sad end, really. I think, you know, all of us who've covered the club over the past few years, he's been one of the best talkers. He's been a huge part in the resurgence. I think that's why it hurts fans so much. You know, it's difference when Bern Leno left, there wasn't really that connection. But I think a lot of fans really did like Ramsdale, and I think it's just a bit of a sad end, really.
Sam, when you see the reaction of the players at full time on Saturday, that shows you how popular that man is in the dressing room, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine it's been quite difficult for those who are closer to Ramsdale in the squad. And I think a lot of them are close to him, given his personality and his warmth and his sort of energy as a person. I imagine it's been quite tricky. And they would have all sat through that or played through that first half thinking, my mate's drowning here, which is what it looked like. And he steadied himself in the second half. And I think that should be said, that he was pretty good in the second half, I thought. And, you know, there were no issues there. But that first half, I think, will live long in people's memories. And the sort of the focus on him is clearly not helping. But yeah, for the players, it must be quite tricky. And also, like, I think no one's questioning whether David Raya is a good guy. I think he's at Brentford, for example, he was one of the main guys in the dressing room. He was part of the leadership group. He was a really important figure and a very popular one. And I'm sure he's come into Arsenal and been himself and, you know, assimilated well. But it's just quite hard when the guy he's overtaken is someone as sort of vivacious a character as Ramsdale is. And I think we saw that a bit at the end of that full-time whistle. Arteta was obviously focused on Havertz and that moment when his sort of project began to take foot, the Havertz project at least, while the rest of the players, I think, were looking at it as Ramsdale's night in a different way, not an entirely positive way, but still one he got through, one he survived, and they were there to sort of support him for a player who I think they must have known needed it.
I mean, just the last point on this and bringing it back to Mikel, I think we've seen how ruthless he can be when he decides that a player isn't up to the standard he desires. Would this also have been aided by, you know, I'm sure Arteta isn't the kind of manager who likes to hear, you know, Mr. Ramsdale Sr. coming out on podcasts and calling out Jamie Carragher on Twitter and things like that. I'm not saying that affects his selection, Ramsdale's selection, but a manager like Mikel's not going to be a fan of that, is he?
No, I wonder. Yeah, I wouldn't ever think that would affect selection, but I wonder if that partly was maybe behind Arteta's comments after the game. Like, he felt quite sort of, I don't know, annoyed about everyone talking about Ramsdale. And it felt like a really easy moment, particularly in his flash interview with TNT, where he was sort of asked about, you know, Ramsdale dealing with the nerves. It felt like a really easy, just open goal for Arteta just to go, yeah, it was brilliant, you know, courageous from him. I'm so proud of the way he bounced back. That's what his mentality's like. But he just sort of wanted to keep talking about the team. So yeah, it's kind of the whole situation has just gone in a sort of pretty sad and sour way. And I do think Arteta has to take some blame for that. Like, it's not been handled very sort of very easy. And I think that's part of the situation because of the transfer itself. Like, I don't think Arsenal went into that summer window, you know, thinking we're going to sign a new goalkeeper and get David Raya. Otherwise, you wouldn't give Ramsdale a new contract. But the opportunity arrived, they could get it done. And they were suddenly left in a situation where they had two goalkeepers. And it's not been managed in the best way. And I think the only thing that Ramsdale can hold on to is a point that was made in a press conference a few weeks ago when you asked Arteta about Ramsdale wanting to leave in January, and Arteta made that point, you know, in March, your role could look very different. Of course, March last year was where Arsenal had those injuries. And I think that is what Arsenal will be thinking ahead of January, is that, look, if David Raya gets an injury, you know, Ramsdale could be the guy who's playing in Champions League, trying to get us the title. So that, I think, will be the only carrot that they can keep him with the rest of the season. Say, look, hold tight, because you could suddenly have a huge role to play here, even if at the moment you don't.
Mark, question for you. Do you think if Arteta had come out that first day that he dropped Ramsdale for Raya and said, look, I'm picking it based on training performances, we think David Raya is best for this game at the moment. And right now, the number one shirt is his, and it's up to Aaron to fight and win that back, which is what has proven to be true. If you think he'd said that rather than what he did say about the two number ones and sharing the role, would there have been the same level of discussion and debate and sort of constant conversation around this, do you think?
No. I wouldn't be surprised if privately that is what Mikel said to Aaron Ramsdale. I can't imagine he said to him what he said to us, because it's proven not to be true, isn't it? I think Mikel at the time was probably trying to wrap Ramsdale's confidence in cotton wool, if you like, to mix some metaphors. But I'd imagine privately there's a conversation being had. Yes, I think he could have nipped it in the bud and said, look, David's in the team now until I deem otherwise, until there's an issue. I think it's worth remembering as well that Saturday, Arteta's hands were tied. He had to play Aaron Ramsdale. It wasn't a selection on Saturday, unless he'd played Kyle Hine, which would have been, the post-match press conference would have been even more interesting. But in those cup games, he decided to give Ramsdale a run out. Saturday, he had no choice. He had to play Ramsdale. I think Simon's right as well. I think he was clearly trying to deflect away after the game and not make it a big deal about Ramsdale playing, because, again, he had to play. For Ramsdale, he's kept a clean sheet. Aaron Ramsdale's a great guy with us on England duty. The camp before the one that's just finished, he openly came out and spoke to a few of us at Wembley about the issue, about not being in the team, about knowing that he needs to get football if he wants to go to the Euros. He's not going to go to the Euros as England's number one. I don't think he would have done, even if he'd been in the Arsenal team every week, because Gareth Southgate is so wedded to Jordan Pickford. Sam Johnson, arguably now, is number two because he's playing week in, week out. And I think he's got the joint most number of clean sheets in the Premier League this season alongside Nick Pope. Southgate's not a big fan of Nick Pope, but does your third choice goalkeeper really matter at a tournament? I'm sure it would to the player that goes. But for Southgate, it's just got to be a goalkeeper, hasn't it, in some way. And I think Aaron Ramsdale now is in a catch-22 situation. Unless he pushes for a move and forces a move, which he doesn't seem that kind of character, he's probably going to play a handful of games between now and the end of the season, isn't he? And that's just the reality of it. Whatever Mikel said to us when Raya first came into the team, whatever he says every time, every other press conference when he gets asked about it, David Raya is Arsenal's number one. And I think that's undisputed at the moment, isn't it? You mentioned him earlier, Sam, but Kai Havertz, 60 million down the drain and all that. The Bournemouth penalty, I want to touch on that quickly, because he felt like he wanted the earth to open up and swallow him when he scored that, and everyone started singing and slapping him on the head, didn't he? Because this is a guy who's won the Champions League. He doesn't want to be scoring, forgetful third goals from the penalty spot in wins at Bournemouth. He wants to be making the kind of impact he did on Saturday. Did his all-round game after he came off the bench impress you, or was it just he was in the right place at the right time to get that goal?
No, I think he was in the right place at the right time. I mean, he had a nice little turn on the edge of the box that was quite sharp, but he hadn't changed the game massively. I don't think anyone could have, given the way the game was and the way that Brentford were defending at that point of the night. But yes, the Bournemouth goal, I think Arteta, the players and the fans all tried really hard at the time to make that the springboard for him and the moment at which it all turned around. And I remember in the press conference after that game, Arteta said, oh, this will change everything for Kai. Obviously, it didn't. And I think you're right about the sort of sheepishness that he might have felt from scoring in a 4-0 win on a sunny afternoon against a poor Bournemouth team. I think the goal against Brentford is very, very different. And I think really could prove to be transformational for him. And you can see that, I think, a bit in his reaction, the way he celebrated it and the way he spoke after the game as well. I mean, he's not the kind of guy to come out and thump his chest and roar that, I'm back, I've announced myself, I'm the big man. That's not his style of personality or character, but I think certainly in his head that will help a lot. And not least because that goal that he scored was effectively the exact goal that Arsenal signed him to score. And Kaya Kainak, friend of the pod, asked a good question of Arteta in the post-match, effectively saying that, like, was this the kind of moment you wanted him for, to tap the box like that? And Arteta said, yes, absolutely. And it was something that was really obvious on pre-season whenever the ball went wide to Saka, Havertz darted to the back post, and he scored 2 goals in 3 games in the US doing that. At the time, I remember thinking this is going to be quite an effective strategy for Arsenal, especially against teams who defend deep, which is pretty much 18 out of 20 Premier League teams. And then obviously, as we all know, for the last 5 months, it's just not happened at all. Whenever he's made the run, the ball hasn't come to him. And when the ball has come in, he's not made the run. So I think the hope for Arsenal will be that, that move and that thing that he brings that no one else in the squad does, which is that aerial threat at the back post, is going to happen more and more. And yeah, I really wouldn't be surprised if this is the turning point for him. I know that seems a bit poetic and a bit sort of narrative-y and journalism-y, but it strikes me that, that could be a really huge sort of intervention in his Arsenal career.
Certainly more than the penalty against Bournemouth. Simon, not to steal a phrase from Greg James and give an unpopular opinion, I actually think Havertz all-round game has slowly been improving in that as he learns that new role. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think before the international break, it felt like he was sort of fitting into the system, that he wasn't sort of pulling up any trees, you know, wasn't scoring goals, creating loads of assists, but like he just kind of felt like he fit in that midfield. And I think the worry I had was that he'd had sort of 3 starts in a row playing in that Martin Odegaard position on the right of it. And it looked okay. And I thought when Odegaard comes back, where's he going to fit again? We're back to the same question of where does Kai Havertz play? And I spent the international break playing left back. But I do think he can fit in that left eight position because, as Sam says, that goal and sort of what he offers, and particularly in these games where teams are sitting so deep, and it was so hard for Arsenal in that Brentford game. I thought, you know, particularly some Onyeka for the Bees did an amazing job. Like the way he was getting out to double up on Martinelli, and then the same on the other side. Like they were so good at doubling up on Saka and Martinelli that to try and pick that lock is so hard. And you almost sort of need to be happy to throw the ball into the box and try and hit a sort of target man. I think Havertz does offer that. And I think in these games, this is what you need from him, something different where they can throw it in there, he can create something out of nothing. And I think if he can add goals to his game, people will stop sort of being so concerned about the price tag. Because at the moment, that is still feels a bit, dare I say, a bit Nicolas Pepe, where everyone talks about Kai Havertz, this is his price tag. But he is contributing to the team. And I think, you know, the argument people have on social media is, well, you didn't sign him to press well or put in tackles, but that is part of his all-round game. And if he can do what Xhaka did and get sort of 10 league goals, I think, you know, he'll have had a very, very good season. But at least now there feels like there is something tangible for him to look at and say, you know, getting a winner in a big game and sending Arsenal top of the league can be an actual turning point for him. Thank you, Daniel! Thank you!
You mentioned there about contributing in big games, which brings us on to Bukayo Saka. I mean, I'm too lazy to have actually gone on and got any numbers, but by most quantifiable stats, he's just the boy, isn't he, at the moment, Bukayo Saka. And Sam, he's getting doubled up on, you know, teams are giving him special attention, but he still produces these moments where, you know, that cross on Saturday, for example, and things like that for club and for country. And yeah, at the moment, is he among the best players in the Premier League, do you think?
He's certainly among the most effective and decisive. So I have got the numbers. It is played 18 games for Arsenal in all competitions this season, 6 goals and 9 assists. So obviously that's just like, you know, ridiculous for a player of his age. And it's pretty much every game he delivers a moment. I think, and I was talking to Simon about this after the game at Brentford, like it's something he's always had, which is very unusual, I think, for when a teenage winger comes through. I think generally they often have a lot of skill, a lot of pace, and lack a bit of end product. Whereas Saka's always had the end product. He had that first, the sort of the decisiveness in the final third and the ability to make the right decision at the right time. He's always had that from the moment he put on the Arsenal shirt in the first team. And that's continued. And then last year and the year before, he started adding the skill and the pace and beating people and really sort of tearing defenders to pieces. But it feels like for me, a lot of wingers, when it's not going for them, they fall back on skill and pace and trying to take their players on. For Saka, he can fall back on decisive moments and putting the ball in the box. And doing so with real quality. And that cross for Havertz reminded me a lot of the one for Trossard at Chelsea, which was another like undefendable ball in, which is just whipped with such pace and at the right angle from the same sort of corner of the box that is so hard to defend. And I think against a team like Brentford, who double up, as Simon said, you need someone who's able just to do that sometimes. Like he can't take his man on every time because he's not going to win it. He's not going to beat him every time. And I think that's partly affecting Martinelli this season, that Martinelli is trying to sort of beat his man and go at him one-on-one, which is what he's told to do and what he's brilliant at doing. But Martinelli's not yet added that level of, okay, fine, if you're going to double up on me, I'll just whip the ball in the box at pace and at this angle. I think if Martinelli does that, he'll obviously add another string to his bow. But Saka's got that. And yeah, I mean, it almost goes without saying now that he's sort of the main man for Arsenal, and his contributions every single game, even when he's having a quiet game, is something that I think only the really very best players can do.
I mean, I think you can judge on that. The fact that, you know, if England's first game of the Euros was tomorrow, he'd be keeping Phil Foden out of an England team. That just shows you how good Bukayo Saka is. Simon, you spoke to Bukayo after the game on Saturday and spoke to him a little bit about that doubling up. What did he say? How did he come across? And he seems to be enjoying his football a lot at the moment, doesn't he?
Yeah, he spoke very well. And he's not someone you hear a lot from, but when he does speak, you know, I think he holds himself in a way that's much greater than his years. And it was interesting, yeah, because he was sort of, first we spoke about the sort of wider team and the issue where, you know, Arsenal themselves are sort of having teams sort of sitting deep. They're not getting the sort of same space they had last season. And then him personally, and he was sort of saying how, you know, he is fully aware of it and he kind of accepts this is going to be the way it is this season, that everyone's going to double up on him, bar maybe in the Champions League where I think he gets a bit more space. And he was saying that he's been watching back all his games. He's been trying to find sort of solutions at how he can combat it. And it sort of ties in with everything you hear about Saka. Like he is, you know, an exceptionally hard worker, very diligent, great attitude. You know, with his recovery, we know about the number of knocks he gets. He literally spends all those days in between matches making sure he's fit. And I think it's the same with his analysis. Clearly, you know, he appreciates now he's going to be a marked man. There's no case of teams taking him for granted. And it's working, obviously. You know, those stats are pretty incredible. When I think all of us think he's been pretty good this season. He's not been amazing. But when you look at the hard numbers, you know, 15 goal contributions in 18 games is pretty ridiculous. Especially when you consider he's been giving away some of his pens as well. So, yeah, I think for Arsenal and for Saka, this is the way it's going to be this season. They need to find a solution. And probably the good thing for Havertz is that he could be part of that solution.
Sam, just finally on Bukayo Saka, is there a risk, an ongoing risk, that he plays so many minutes at this age that we see him burn out far too young?
Yeah, it's the ongoing debate, isn't it? And I think both Saka and Arteta are in the same side of the argument on this, which is that the best players in the world play 60 games a year. And that is true. If you look at, you know, the best players of the last 15 years, that's what they have been doing. So I can completely see that argument. But also, I do look at the way he gets fouled and the physical treatment he receives. And I do worry sometimes that, you know, he might get to 28 and just be limping around and hobbling around a lot. And there's only so much you can do. You know, he, as Simon says, he does all the work behind the scenes that you need to avoid injury and protect yourself. But there's only so much you can do, just like the constant battering that he's going to get. And I think back to that press conference after Villa v Arsenal a couple of years ago, and Steven Gerrard, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but Gerrard was like, well, Saka's going to have to get used to it. I can't go on a treadmill anymore. I've got, you know, two hips replacements and that sort of thing, and no ankles left. And I remember being like, is that what we should be really like lionizing and glorifying? And if that's what's going to happen, that seems not ideal, obviously. But maybe that is, maybe Saka's different. Maybe Arsenal and Arteta and Saka genuinely think that his biological makeup, his strength, his physicality can handle it for a decade. And I think everyone would hope that's the case.
I was really hoping you're going to do a Scouse accent there. I think also Mikel Arteta, though, when he's asked about Saka getting fouled and kicked, he almost uses it a chance to almost tell Saka he needs to be tough, doesn't he? He never really has a go at the players or calling for the referees to protect Saka. He says he needs to be more clever with how he receives the ball and what he does. And I think that is, again, it's just saying, look, we believe in you, we've got faith in you, but you are going to have to accept that you're going to get kicked up in the air three or four times a game, because sometimes that is the only way to stop him. Sam?
One thing I would say on it, a couple of years ago, Arsenal tried to sign Rafinha, which effectively is who's a right winger, and he would have really eased the burden, I think, playing minutes-wise on Saka. And they've never really found, they've not found another right winger of that kind of quality to ease the burden on Saka. I think that's partly because Saka is so good. So why would you want to join a club where you know that you're going to be behind the kid who's 22 and has just signed a new contract and is the player that everyone is looking to? But also, I mean, obviously Reece Nelson is there, but I think it's fair to say that he's just not at the level of Saka, and Arteta's choices certainly suggest that he agrees with that. But I do wonder if one day they'll think maybe we really should push for another right winger, and allow Saka to have those games where he comes out of the team a bit more, because they've got it in most other positions now. They just don't have it in that one right winger slot.
Speaking of Saka coming out of the team, Lons, Simon, a chance to rest him, or does he play? Does Arteta go full strength, given that that top spot's still not secure?
I mean, I think with Saka, he just plays. That seems to be, if Saka's fit, Saka plays. But the team itself, I don't think Arteta will make huge changes. I could see maybe sort of two or three, but I think for Arsenal, this is a case where if you win this game, you're guaranteed top spot in that group. And you basically give yourself a night off in Eindhoven in the middle of December before that busy Christmas period. And I think the value of that, you know, having a clear midweek, I think it comes in between the Villa and Brighton games, which will be two pretty high energy games. And if you can go there to Eindhoven and basically say, look, this game's irrelevant. We can give some players Champions League experience. So Ramsdale can finally play a Champions League game. Some of the younger players can get a taste of it. I think for Arteta, he'll go pretty strong against Lons. I think Havertz will probably get a start. Could maybe see like someone like Jorginho maybe getting a few more minutes. But I think for Arteta, it'll be a case of, look, get it wrapped up, get the top spot done, and then you've got a midweek off in a few weeks' time.
Sam, how do you think this team, we spoke about it with Gabriel Jesus ahead of the first game, and he said, you know, the players were listening to the music in the changing room and getting G'd up about it, and not many of that team had played in the Champions League. Have they adjusted to it and adapted to it well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously the group is quite an easy one, and that is something to bear in mind when you look back at the Champions League campaign so far, and the tougher tests are still to come. But generally, they've handled it really well. I think that Seville game was a really impressive one. The atmosphere was very good, and Seville are a strong team in Europe, even if they've not really shown that this year. Obviously, Lons away was poor, and that happens. But just like that sort of game seems to happen sort of once a year for Arsenal. They just never get going. And it happened in PSV last year, if you remember. I think they lost 2-0 there. They just sort of struggle a bit. Obviously, the challenge will be after Christmas when they get a big draw. And I think that's one of the things that Arteta needs to prove still, that he can navigate a tricky European tie. Because if we're being honest, his Europa League record at Arsenal in the knockout stages has been not great, and that's something I'm sure he's aware of and looking to correct. But yeah, I totally agree with Simon that win this game and that midweek being free-ish, well, you can play the weaker side is really important. Not least because that Brighton game on the Sunday. I know Brighton haven't been in the same level of performance in recent weeks as they were for much of last season, but Brighton had Arsenal's number last year. That 3-0 win at the Emirates was one of the most sort of eye-opening performances of the season, and Arsenal were very aware that they were done that day, and I don't think they have any intention of letting that happen again. And if Arteta can rest five or six key players for the PSV game, then I'm sure he happily would.
Time now for our new feature, Outside of Arsenal. Each of our guests will get one question and they can give a quick answer as to whether they agree with me or not. I'm going to come to you first, Simon Collings. Garnacho's overhead kick was better than Wayne Rooney's.
On pure technique, yes. On the magnitude of the occasion, no.
absolutely spot on. Sam Dean, Aston Villa are genuine Premier League title contenders.
No, because the Thursday nights will get them eventually. They get everyone eventually.
There you go. Easy as that. I agree with both of those, actually. I think that Garnacho finish is world class, isn't it? But it's against Everton, isn't it? So Rooney's will always take a bit of precedence on that. And Sam, I think you're spot on. I think that squad, when it gets into that stage of the Conference League where they decide they might be able to win it and Emery knows what he's doing in that tournament, you know, does that then become their main goal? Time now for a regular feature as we play Guess the Gooner. I'll read out a list of clues that link to a current or former Arsenal player. Sam and Simon will try and guess by manically shouting their names and then giving me the name of an Arsenal player they believe fits the clues. So let's play, for the first time this year, Guess the Gooner. I'm the second most capped player for my country, having made my senior debut in 2007. I'm also my country's record goalscorer, having scored 18 more times than the player in second place. I scored 8 goals in 39 Premier League appearances for Arsenal.
Stop.
Simon Collins?
Is it Sorry. Nicholas Bentner?
Incorrect. I have won top flight domestic titles in 2 countries, the first 2 that I played in. I've made 682 club appearances across 8 teams, and Arsenal is one of only 2 of those teams where I failed to win silverware.
Stop.
Sam Dean.
Are you Carlos Vela?
I am not. I have played in a Champions League, Europa League, and Europa Conference League final.
Europa Conference League final?
That's what the man said.
Hold the phone. There's only been 2 of those, and I was at one of them.
Maybe it's you. Assists on my Arsenal debut.
The conference big one's rattled.
Simon Collins.
Gervinho?
Incorrect. I joined Arsenal in January 2018.
Oh. Stop.
Yes.
Wait, no. Hang on. Aubameyang joined them, but it can't be Aubameyang.
It is not Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Stop.
Collins.
Henrik Mkhitaryan.
It is Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Oh!
I was running out. I had 1 clue left, yeah. So well done. I think you'd have got it from the last clue, which was I missed out on playing in a major cup final for Arsenal due to security grounds.
Of course. Yep.
I was thinking of Aubameyang, then I was like, Aubameyang scored more than 8 Premier League goals for Arsenal.
He played, obviously, the Champions League final last year. He played in the Europa League final for Manchester United and scored. And Europa Conference League with Roma.
Yeah, I totally forget that he's actually still playing.
He is. And obviously, he's the second most capped Armenian of all time.
Christ, who's the most capped Armenian of all time? That's the real question.
I would pronounce it if I thought I wouldn't offend the whole of Armenia. And yes, scored 18 more times for Armenia than anyone else.
Fair play.
I thought great, so. I thought made 3 assists on my Arsenal debut. I thought that was right in your wheelhouse, Sam Dean.
Was that Everton?
Yeah, record. No one's ever made 3 assists on their Premier League debut. I should have maybe played the Alexis Sanchez piano music over the top of this one. Might have helped you get it a bit easier. Right. Well, there you go. A winning start to our delayed campaign for Simon Collins. We'll be back later in the week to have a look back on that Lions game and preview the visit of Wolverhampton Wanderers. Until then, stay safe, everyone.